Hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Mance Rader. This is episode 105. I'll put it up on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Evoox, YouTube, on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com, and try to get it up on libertarianinstitute.org in the blog section. Well, I announced on my last podcast that my book, The Kids Are Not All Right, has come out. It's on Amazon. It's been the number one new release now for, I guess, a week and a half in three different categories: anarchism, socialism and communism, and libertarianism. So it's doing well. I'm getting a lot of good feedback about it. I'm doing some interviews about it. You may have heard me on Dave Smith's Part of the Problem this past Monday. That was a lot of fun. I'll be doing another interview tomorrow. I'll let you know about all that, where you can listen to it. I did an interview with Keith Knight, who's been on this podcast before this week. I'll try and link that up in the show notes. It's been a lot of fun talking about this book. This book is, people really seem to like this book. They really seem to like the message. And I think they see it as a good tool for teaching people who have no idea what's going on in the culture, especially the culture of the college campuses. And, you know, basically what's going on and what's crossing over into the culture of human resources departments in huge companies. So check it out. Search Mance Rader on Amazon. You'll see The Kids Are Not All Right. You'll see it's available for paperback and Kindle. The paperback version came out so awesome. I couldn't ask for better formatting, and the book just like looks great. The Kindle formatting is just a little weird when you use as many pictures as I do. You have to use different programs to do it, and basically every page you're just going to have to expand on your electronic device. So, but the, like I said, the paperback looks amazing. So I want to give a shout out to libertymugs.com. Check them out. They're selling coffee mugs that have some great propaganda on them. Anarchist propaganda, anti-communist propaganda, just some really funny stuff, some conspiracy theory propaganda. Check them out at libertymugs.com. The guys who run that site are really cool guys. So, all right, let me get into this. I'm sure you've seen the title of the podcast, and it looks inflammatory. It looks like I'm trying to start some shit, and I'm really not. I just want to talk about how government never works. I guess the argument could be made that, to a certain extent, smaller governments work. Andorra seems to be a great place to live. Liechtenstein, that seems to be a place that people who live there love it. Their prince is very, very libertarian, allows secession of the individual. But when it comes to 350 million people, and this experiment started over 200 years ago, I think that it's painfully obvious that this isn't working, and that when it all comes down to it, living under a government, a government that starts off small, preaches that it's going to stay small, but almost immediately starts growing and becomes a, you know, you start seeing Leviathan start to spread its wings. And yeah, it's, I don't see how people who have woken up to freedom, libertarian values, you know, are still defending the police and defending having a socialized police force and a socialized military, a socialized anything. I mean, it just doesn't. It doesn't work. You can't calculate it economically. What the price of what's the market value of a police officer? What's the market value of a soldier? You know, what's the market value of somebody who's going to build a road? You know, they just set a price and it always turns into bloat. So I'm just going to go back to the beginning, start talking about this, and I'm going to mention the Constitution a lot, because a lot of people will point to the Constitution and say, see, that's supposed to keep us small. That says we're supposed to be small. But, you know, what did Spooner say? He said either the Constitution has given us the government we have or has been impotent to prevent it. I know I'm paraphrasing, but you know, you get the gist of it. So I believe it's fair to say that the founding fathers were minarchists, or, you know, people that believed in a limited government, considering they came from a monarchy. I think they believed that government should be bare bones. I think most constitutionalists, and when I first crossed over into libertarianism, I would probably still consider myself a constitutionalist at that time. I would have broke it down into three things that the government should do and that they're authorized to do per the Constitution, was to provide for national defense, build and maintain roads and waterways, and to coin money or the currency. It seems simple enough, but considering the growth we've seen since, say, the war between the North and the South, I call it the War of Northern Aggression. Most commonly in the government schools, they'll call it the Civil War. And, you know, considering the fact that fewer and fewer people over time have sought to rein in the power of the government or just even care, is it a good idea to give government control of even those three things now? When it comes to currency, even from the beginning, we had people like Alexander Hamilton, who was undoubtedly a big government guy. You know, he wanted a central bank. That's something that's not authorized in the Constitution. And it's actually advocated as one of the 10 planks of communism. You know, but Hamilton wanted that for this country. Free marketeers such as myself know that a central bank will lead to boom-bust cycles, especially with unbacked fiat currency, and the way they manipulate the interest rates to create money is, and just take a look at the Austrian business cycle, and you can see it over and over. Whenever there's a bust, it's just, the Austrian business cycle is just like a roadmap as to what happened. National defense has become a big business, especially since World War II. After World War II, they built the Pentagon. You know, you can't help but look at the Pentagon and see that they were thinking that there was going to be perpetual war. You just don't build something like that without the idea that, you know, you're going to use it, that it's going to be a necessity. And even to the point where if we don't have a use for it, we need to make something up, create something. The government has entangled itself in undeclared wars where the loss of life has been great, but the profits for a chosen few military contractors has actually been greater. And they're the ones that seem to profit whenever old men send young men off to war. You know, whether it was Korea or Vietnam, Afghanistan, etc., it appears those in charge have not the know-how as to... They don't know how to achieve the goal of victory, even if that was their aim in the first place. Who knows if that's what we get into these things for? Afghanistan looks like the perfect example of we're going to get into war and the war is going to be permanent. Many times in the last 17 years, but especially in the early, you know, in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, you know, they talked about how this was going to be generational war, fighting radical Islamic terror. Many of us have been watchers of the stocks of companies like Northrop Grumman and the Boeings of the world. And, you know, we see that, I'll pull this one out. Rand Paul the other day was talking about how we need to stop arming Saudi and supporting Saudi in their war against Yemen. And he said this in an interview with Wolf Blitzer. And Wolf Blitzer started questioning what would happen if we stopped this to American jobs. He basically said the, you know, reported 500,000 people dying of cholera, something that can be, you don't even need medication for that. You just need fluids, or like Scott Horton says, you just need Gatorade. Got these people who are dying, and Wolf Blitzer's worried about American jobs. At these defense contractors, I assume, or maybe in the military, I don't know. They always seem to have enough jobs. And then, you know, talk about roads. When it comes to roads, which one of us hasn't read a story in their local paper about the state senator whose brother-in-law is receiving all the contracts and that his company is taking three times as long to do the work as is necessary? There was a strip of road that was no longer than an eighth of a mile down in Oakland Park, which is part of Broward County, right outside of Fort Lauderdale, down in Florida, that I remember going up and down. And for 12 years, there was construction crews and construction equipment out on this one stretch of road. And it never seemed like anything was ever being done. But I can assume somebody was getting paid. Yeah. Have you ever seen a stretch of road in your hometown where you don't see anything being done, or you see it being done over such a long time? I mean, I'm sure if you think about it, you know, you'll agree with me that it's just, it's a farce. I mean, we had a situation down here in Atlanta where part of 285, which an overpass part of 285, collapsed. And just collapsed. I mean, two huge sections of it. And it shut down north and south. And we, considering how long it takes for construction around here, we figured this was going to be 6 months. And they had it up and going. I mean, you're talking about an elevated roadway. They had it up and going within a month, you know, within a month and a half. If they can do that for that, why can't they do that? Why can't every road be, I mean, most of the roads I see construction on aren't even elevated. You would think an elevated one would, you know, be four times the difficulty, five times the difficulty, but no, they got it up because somebody decided it needed to be up a lot quicker. Probably somebody's election was on the line. The bloat and corruption that I'm mentioning is just the tip of the iceberg. I doubt I need to convince anyone listening to this, you know, how prevalent it is. So I guess the main question that needs to be answered is whether this government, or any for that matter, once they bloat to where the U.S. is right now, can it be reset to minarchism? Or can minarchism be kept at its current levels once it's there? You know, in my opinion, just no way. There's no way we're going to get this back to minarchism. Not on a grand scale, not on a national scale. I believe on a local scale, but that would take secession. That would take middle finger to federal powers. And I don't really see, you know, that would take the people in that area getting very vocal about it. Let's look at the Constitution, because most people I know who are minarchists are still constitutionalists. And, you know, at one time I considered myself a constitutionalist. So can the Constitution be used to reel in government? I say never. The Constitution relies on the government to limit its own powers. Let me repeat that. The Constitution relies on the government to limit its own powers. There's supposed to be a checks and balances among the three branches. And that's what we're taught in civics class. But as Lou Rockwell deftly points out in his book Against the State, and I'm quoting here, "The problem with this is that the Supreme Court, which as the Constitution has developed, has become the highest arbiter of constitutional issues, is itself a part of the government. In a dispute between the federal government and the people, it is unlikely to side against the government." This is logic and reason. This is not conspiracy theory territory at all. Those in power see themselves and their cohorts as the protectors of the people. People often are a direct threat from other people. Therefore, the people are suspect. People want a government because they don't trust other people. How is the government supposed to trust people? This is most evident in local policing. Even those who leap to defend what I call indefensible actions of cops admit in their apologetics that police don't, I'm quoting here because I think this is real important. You have to listen to this. People who, you know, I won't use some of the terms that I use on Twitter for people who love the police, but this is the kind of thing these people will say. And these are the people who will back police no matter what, unquestioningly. Police don't know if they're pulling over or entering the house of someone who wishes them harm. In my mind, when you say something like that, and I'll say it again, Police don't know if they're pulling over or entering the house of someone who wishes them harm. In my mind, this is clear evidence that state actors put themselves above those they are supposed to be serving and even hold contempt for the public. If they're shitting their pants every time they pull a car over because something mechanical went wrong in the car that the person driving it can't see, you know, a broken taillight or something like that, you know, unless they have a newer car and it tells them, or they're going into a house to, I don't know, there's been a lot of incidences lately of people saying, can you do a wellness check on my relative? And then they show up and, you know, the relative is obviously has mental problems. And, you know, instead of helping them, the police kill them. And there's been a lot of that. I'm not going to go into all the incidences and give examples of that, but just do a Google search of wellness check, police kill. All right. With the epidemic of recent shootings of innocent people by law enforcement, local and federal, are you surprised at the amount of police that never suffer consequences for their actions or even straight up murder? I mean, they suffer no consequences at all. I'm going to go off a little bit on local police now because, you know, people have a tendency to not equate them with government. I equate them with government. I don't even like to call them police, local police. I like to call them government because they are government. They are carrying out arbitrary laws. They are enforcing. And think about the word enforcing. The word force is in there. They are enforcing arbitrary laws, most of which do not have a victim where somebody's person or property has been hurt. Many of these are arbitrary, extremely arbitrary. Rayford Davis, who's a former police officer turned anarchist, he's appeared on this podcast 3 times. He says that the jury is only to take into consideration the expert that testifies as to how police are trained to handle a situation such as the one said officer is being accused of or being tried for. We're assuming there's a trial here. Rayford says, in most instances, the expert will be the one who trained them to handle the situation as such. If procedure says to shoot, if you, quote unquote, fear for your life, the jury is forced to only take that into consideration for its verdict. This would be a good time, I want to point out to everyone, that all the way back in episode 11 of this podcast, Free Man Beyond the Wall, with myself, I did an episode on jury nullification. And I think the title of the episode, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it was something like, if you want to make a difference, do this. Most people don't want to go to jury duty because, you know, it's a waste of time. They may not get paid by their company. They're losing money by being there. But really, if you want to take a bite out of this system, jury duty is one of the easiest ways to do it. Go there, get on a jury. Start telling everybody in that jury box about jury nullification. Nobody is going to tell them about that. Jury nullification is simply, if you're on a jury, somebody's being tried for something, and you think the law is bullshit, you can say not guilty. I would not do that in a case of somebody who has hurt somebody's person or property. But in a case of drug possession or drug dealing or something where there is no victim that can be shown except for, you know, the people versus the state of whatever versus, you know, the state is not being hurt by this. If there is no victim, not guilty, and tell everybody else in that jury room. People, these cops that are going up there and getting being put on trial and being found innocent because the jury is being instructed that this is done a certain way. Jury nullification, you can go into that room and say, hey, guess what? We don't have to listen to that. If we believe that this person did wrong, We can find them guilty no matter what. We just have to believe it. Jury nullification goes both ways. If you think a crime is bullshit, yeah. But if you think somebody's gonna, if you think a cop, because of the way he was trained, is gonna get off because that was his training and that's what he's supposed to do, you can say guilty. All right, let me get away from the police and go over to some clear examples. I want to go back to the Constitution and show you some ways that the Constitution has failed to restrain government. Not only that, but just completely ignored, trampled upon, and shredded. The First Amendment. I think most people who have been libertarians for a long time, studied foreign policy, studied history of this country, a lot of people would say that Woodrow Wilson is the worst president we ever had. The guy was just a friggin' horror show. He oversaw the implementation of the income tax. He was a cheerleader for the Federal Reserve. He got America into World War I after he campaigned, "There's no way we're getting into this war." But that's not all. He drove a truck over freedom of speech and the press. He had become a hero for keeping, like I said, he'd become a hero for keeping America out of World War I. There was even a campaign slogan that he had in 1916. "He kept us out of the war." Wilson decided to get the United States into war in 1917, into World War I. When all this anti-war rhetoric started up, Wilson had some bills wrote up. First one was the Espionage Act of 1917 and the Sedition Act of 1918. I'm just going to read something. This is from, this is basically the crux of these laws. Quoting here: "Whoever, when the United States is at war, shall willfully make or convey false reports or false statements with intent to interfere with the operation or success of the military or naval forces of the United States, or to promote the success of its enemies, and whoever, when the United States is at war, shall willfully cause or attempt to cause insubordination, disloyalty, mutiny, refusal of duty in the military or naval forces of the United States, or shall willfully obstruct the recruiting or enlistment service of the United States to the injury of the service or of the United States, shall be punished by a fine of not more than $10,000 or imprisoned for not more than 20 years or both." Basically, this was interpreted however federal law enforcement wished it to be. Basically, they sought to silence and jail anti-war activists. Famously, Wilson had journalist Eugene Debs thrown in prison for his anti-war rhetoric. Can you imagine basically what he was doing? We've seen this in the last 17 years. Whenever anybody speaks out against the wars, what is it? Whenever anybody speaks out against Afghanistan, Iraq War II or Iraq War III, now Yemen or Syria recently, if you speak out against it, what are you? You're a traitor. What do you, you think Assad's a good guy? I just heard the wenches on Fox Business say that to David Stockman the other day. David Stockman's talking about how we need to stay out of this. Now, oh, so you think Assad's a good guy? That's where this shit comes from. I mean, Lincoln did it to a certain extent. I don't want to get into Lincoln right now because I hate Wilson much more. This anti-war rhetoric, if you spoke out against the war in World War One, you know, after Wilson got us into World War One, you could be thrown in jail or fined. So where was the limitation on government there? I guarantee you there were patriots who said, yeah, they should be in jail, just like there's patriots now. And I guarantee you those patriots believed in limited government, just like the patriots now and the conservatives who want to talk about how, oh, I believe in limited government, but if you criticize the military, you criticize police, you just call a crackhead, or you're against the troops. What could be more pro-troop than want to keep them out of harm's way? Let me jump away from the First Amendment now and go to the Second. I mean, do I even have to give examples for the Second? Any federal law that puts a limit or a restriction on any firearm usage is an infringement of the Second Amendment. Flat out. Episode 90 of this podcast was called An Anarchist Explains the Second Amendment, where I proved to you that the Second Amendment was about individuals and not about the government. And all you have to do is look at those four words, shall not be infringed. The Bill of Rights is what the government cannot do to us, is what they're restricted from doing to us. How can, if the Second Amendment's only about the government having guns, what are they going to infringe upon themselves? It's the most friggin' ridiculous thing I've ever heard. It's the most ridiculous argument. Well, maybe the muskets argument, but this one's stupid too, so. What about the Fourth Amendment? Privacy. Are you serious? Are you serious? And I will say it again. The most limited government constitutionalist conservatives will say, if you don't have anything to hide, you have nothing to worry about. They look at people like Edward Snowden as a traitor, even though Edward Snowden proved, and it's all come out since then, that the United States basically records every bit of our electronic communication, and it can be pulled up within a matter of minutes. That's what they did with the Boston bombers. They had their information within I think a half hour. They just access it. Privacy. Police will make up an excuse. The courts, which we've already talked about, have given them free rein to search your car, to come into your house with something just called probable cause. What the hell is probable cause? But yeah, conservatives, minarchists, constitutionalists, limited government people. If you have nothing to hide, you don't have anything to worry about, right? Sixth Amendment, right to a speedy trial. 800 people in Guantanamo Bay for a decade without a trial. Oh, but they were war criminals, were they? Turns out that only 23 or 24 of them were members of Al-Qaeda, and a bunch of them were there because they shared a name with somebody who was in Al-Qaeda, tortured for 10 years, for a decade, there because they happened to share a name, or they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. The problem with that is the wrong place was their fucking home. Their land. Then if you want to talk about right to a speedy trial, going back to the espionage and sedition acts, Fourth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, I mean, they just rolled all over them. How about the Eighth Amendment? Can't have excessive bail. Excessive fines are cruel. Unusual punishments. You ever seen the bail for selling a plant? The fines, the amount of money people have to pay just to be on probation is basically extortion. If you want to get out of jail, you're going to have to pay us. Unusual punishments. What do conservatives like to call them? Rape cages. Oh, that guy's going to get raped because he sold a plant. Conservatives, minarchists. I'm sorry, if you're a minarchist, you're advocating central planning. Most of the minarchists I say that, you know, police, military. Well, how are you going to rein them in? Have you been able to do it up until now? 10th Amendment. That one goes to states' rights. I mean, California decides to legalize weed or medical marijuana. Federal law, the feds pass a law saying that's illegal. They go in there and they cross the lines. What do they use as the excuse? What do they use as an excuse to be able to do that? The fucking Constitution. The Interstate Commerce Act. Well, if weed's legal there, but it's not legal in Nevada, it could cross the line. Isn't that Nevada's problem? Has the Constitution ever done anything to limit government on a grand scale? Look at the government we have now. As Spooner said, has voting changed anything? If you get the right people in there, how long was Ron Paul in there for? Answer the question. You have guys like Massey who are in there right now, Amash, Rand Paul, who knows what the hell he believes on a weekly basis. Has voting changed anything? You got your tax cut, you didn't get a spending cut. Oh, and guess what? The tax cut's gonna expire in 5 years. The corporate tax cut doesn't expire. Did you look at that? As far as I see it, the only way that you could limit government is if people stood outside the legislature with guns and threatened them. Does that sound feasible? Is that what do you want? A reverse dictatorship? At that point, you don't need a government. They're administrative at best. And I know a lot of people would like to see that. But an administrative government is going to find ways to grow. Could be argued that this government started off as administrative. Look where it is now. In this land, we have no hopes of reducing government. In my estimation, the only way that we could have freedom is we need to scale it down. What Hoppe said at one point, like 1,000 city states. People can move back and forth between them. If one's more free and libertarian, or if someone wants to live in a socialist city, they should be allowed to do that. We're not setting up. No one wants to set up a libertarian dictatorship where we force people to be free. If they want to go and they want to get with people and form their own little commune, whatever. I think they'll eventually end up coming to us for help because it'll fail. But what's the answer? If history has shown us anything, especially the last 230, 40 years, government's not the answer. The free market is what has made us comfortable. The free market is what's given us air conditioning. The free market is what's given us food on demand. The free market has given us cell phones, has given us this internet, this podcast that you're listening to right now. I guess the argument could be made that the government did invent the internet, but what the hell did they do with it? It wasn't anything until the free market took over. So, yeah, don't even try that one. All right, I'll just leave you with the question. From what you've seen from the last 240 years, does government work? Especially taking into consideration from World War I, which is pretty much where I started and concentrated most of this talk. Something to think about. I wrote my first book, Freedom Through Memedom, and my whole goal with that book was that anybody who read it, I wanted to turn them into an anarchist, voluntarist, ANCAP, however you wish to call it. Somebody who believed that the free market could do everything. I don't see any other way forward if we're ever going to have true personal freedom. I want to remind you about my book, the new one, The Kids Are Not All Right. Search Amazon.com, Mance Rader. You'll see it come up, paperback and Kindle. It's the reviews that are coming in about it are just, it's humbling. I'm glad everybody likes it, and I'm glad everybody thinks it can be a good teaching tool and that it's educational. So check that out. I'm coming back with another podcast in the middle of the week. I don't know if it's going to be an interview yet or just another solo one, but I promise I will do my best to make sure that the content is something that you will enjoy and hopefully learn from. So this is Mance Rader. This is the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. Take care.